land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be.
Well, good evening. Welcome to Yada Yada Radio. My pleasure to be with you. We are a week from celebrating Passover. I think last week I misspoke. It was a combination of two things. The first part of it was true. We are going to be celebrating Pesach tomorrow night. My son and his girlfriend are arriving for a 5-6 day visit here in the U.S. Virgin Islands, and he very seldom gets to celebrate Pesach with family. And so we are going to celebrate a Pesach early with him, since he's going to be here. In fact, it'll be a lovely setting. We'll be at anchor in a beautiful cove on St. John tomorrow evening as we celebrate Passover with him. And then we will also celebrate Pesach and Matzah at their proper time a week from tonight. My error happened to be that I knew we were going to be celebrating a Passover with my son, but I looked at our website, which I really am proud of and love. The yadaya.com website has been so beautifully presented, and we're about to add the added feature of the passage search, which I use all the time now in my writing, where you can look at any book and you can see every place that a passage was translated. You click on it, it'll bring it up for you to read right to the left. But so many want to just say, "Have you translated that?" And, you know, now with 27 books, well, yeah, I think I did, but where? And this does a wonderful job of presenting where all the different places that a passage has been translated. And there's some, like 2 Samuel 7, that whole chapter, I bet it's translated in 6 or 7 different places. I mean, it's was the first passage that caused us to be interested in translation. It's where it all began almost 21 years ago now. And we have grown in our understanding of who it's talking about and what it's talking about. So it continues to come up as something to translate. One of the things, Kirk, you and I talked about at the beginning of the show, I'm not stating this as an authority. I don't like to state much of anything as an authority. I much prefer to state things that I have learned as a teacher, and encourage others to learn from, you know, benefit from what I've learned, and also to go off and do their own study. But my view of the Mikra is that God is a whole lot less concerned about when we celebrate them than whether or not we understand what they represent, accept them, and capitalize upon them. So it's not about having the perfect meal for Pesach or celebrating matzah exactly at the right time for whether it's 7 days of matzah or 7 days including Pesach, since we eat matzah during Pesach, and I view Pesach as part of matzah. I think Yahweh does too.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as much about being precise on timing as it is about understanding. You know,
yeah.
Pesach is the doorway to life. And Pesach without matzah is counterproductive because you would be immortal and separated from God and imperfect, because matzah is the day that our souls are unyeasted. The fungus of religion and politics are removed from our souls so that we appear perfect before God and so that he can adopt us into his family. And in the covenant family, we are immortal and perfected. And that's the benefit of the first three Moed Mikre with Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim, all under the umbrella of Chag Matzah, leading to Shabuah, which is the promise of the Shabbat, where the beneficiaries of Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim are enriched, empowered, and enlightened. And we are these things for our own benefits, but also for the benefit of others, so that we can be effective troubadours, exclaiming God's message, sharing it as a constant celebration of Teruah. I think one of the reasons that we don't know the year that Teruah will be fulfilled is because it is the constant Mikra. It's the one Mikra that, well, we've been celebrating it now 6 and 7 days a week for almost 21 years.
Mm-hmm.
It does have an eternity to it. And, of course, those first five Moed Mikre lead to reconciliations. Reconciliations is the celebration of Yahweh's relationship being restored with Yisrael and Yehuda. Because Yisrael and Yehuda, Israelis and Jews, have been on a time out from Yahweh for the past 3,000 years, and there haven't been any Israelites that have been willing to openly engage, learn what Yahweh is offering, and share vociferously with his people, openly exposing and condemning Judaism while revealing the truth about Yahweh's name, apart from those who came through the work that we're doing here and the books that we've written and the shows that we have provided. And so there are now goyim, such as ourselves, who are committed to awakening the chosen people so that there will be a sizable reunion come Yom Kippurim in year 6000 Yah, which is October 2nd, as the sun sets in Jerusalem 2033. 5 days later, the earth is restored to the conditions found in Eden, and we celebrate life on earth with Yahweh in his home, with Dod as our king and shepherd for 1,000 years, beginning on Sukkah in year 6000 Yah, which is also in 2033. What we're going to do tonight is have one item that I want to discuss in the news, and then we're going to return to the our review of the book of Yaketzel Ezekiel. Many of you know that Israel is going through a double heartache, or actually really a triple heartache at the moment. The Muslims are going berserk again. The way Muslims celebrate Ramadan is to kill Jews. And they are returning to their savage roots, murdering Jews. So it is a very tough time for Yahweh's people. And we're saddened by the response of Muslims towards Jews. The second trauma is the abandonment by this administration. It not only is trying to undermine Israel for the benefit of the fake Estenians and impose a two-state non-solution, or what I would call the final solution, which is the ultimate destruction of Israel. As soon as the two-state solution is imposed, Israel will become the next Czechoslovakia with peace in our time, as Neville Chamberlain so ignorantly proposed. And so that is the second trauma. That trauma is also materializing in what has to be the worst administration in the history of America. Now, working out a nuclear deal with Iran that not only assures they will have a nuclear bomb, but that they will have enormous amount of monies to build all manner of drones and missiles to deliver that that bomb. And it's a very sad thing that that America has done. But, you know, when you read the Torah and prophets, particularly Yeshaya 18 and 19, or 17 and 18, it becomes abundantly clear that the nation that the United that Yahweh is most angry at in the last days is the United States of America. And it's for this kind of stupidity and belligerence. I was watching, as we typically do during dinner, newscasts. We watch them from around the world. And a couple nights ago, we were watching a newscast from Australia. We just don't watch American newscast unless it's some political commentator that we find interesting. But in Australia, the mainstream media was doing a series of shows, primetime news, mocking the United States. This is supposed to be our friend. And the reason they were mocking the United States, they would play clips of Biden saying things like, sanctions are not a deterrent. They're there to create pain. And then he continues to plunge the world into food shortages and roaring inflation and energy shortages, and actually provoked the war that we're experiencing in Ukraine, and continues to impose sanctions when he says, okay, they don't exist. Then they would show clips of easily the least qualified person to ever hold the office of Vice President of the United States, and her public speeches and addresses, and they would play them. And at the after playing a 1, 2, or 3 minute clip, they would just look awestruck and say, "How is it possible that America has sunk this far, that they would have such an unqualified person as the leader of the country?" But the Vice President of the United States is wholly and totally, absolutely, unequivocally unqualified for that position, and dangerous to this country, a laughingstock around the world, as is the Biden administration. About 6 months ago, I guess, maybe a year ago, I did a show where one of 10 news items was the fact that found a Hunter Biden's laptop, and that the reports initially on that laptop was that they affirmed that Hunter Biden and his father, Joe Biden, had profited considerably in their dealings with Ukraine and with the communist Chinese government. And for mentioning what was a mainstream news story at the time, this program was banned from YouTube. And the reason was that it was interference with election policy. Now, interesting, of course, is my commentary was fact-based, and it was 4 months after or 5 months after the election, or maybe even longer. The second thing is that the FBI now has Hunter Biden's laptop. The dealings between Hunter Biden and the inclusion of Joe Biden or the tune in the Ukraine and with the Chinese government, the communist Chinese government, are the tune of millions and millions of dollars. $4 million here, $2 million here, another million there. It's big money. And the records show that Joe Biden was compensated along with Hunter Biden. And the records also show that that Joe Biden tried to assist those that Hunter Biden was dealing with, which is that's bribery. And he flat out denounced it and denied it during the presidential debates. Turned out to be an absolute lie. He knew it. It happened. And so a huge issue in that presidential election, not only did Biden lie knowingly, which should be an impeachable act, but the news media, without exception, well, I can't say without exception, there are a few political commentators that had the story right. But that was not true with the New York Times, the Washington Post, ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN. Every one of them not only denied that there was any validity to the claim that Hunter Biden and Joe Biden profited mightily from deals that were being done in the Ukraine and with the Chinese government, and they attacked and tried to besmirch the reputation of anyone, including Trump, who claimed otherwise. Well, now they're running retractions, and they're trying to bury the retraction. They'll have some opening paragraph that's pretty benign. In the middle of the article, they'll say, yeah, it's verified that, and it's far worse than anyone could have imagined. And it is really sad how the U.S. news media has become an echo chamber of the progressives and how little of what they say is correct. It's very, very frustrating in today's world how truth has become so endangered. You know, if you pay any attention to the Ukrainian war, you'll recognize that the first thing the West did is they banned any reporting from Russia. So we don't have access to what one side says is happening. And the information we're getting from the other side is not the least bit credible. Virtually everything they have reported thus far has turned out not to be true. And so it is, it's just a disaster, and there's no sense of responsibility for us weaponizing the Ukraine or the consequence in lives. Well, the third thing I wanted to talk about in terms of Israel is that there's two Knesset members, both of which were in, I believe, the Yemeni party, which would be the current prime minister's party. It's the sad thing about the parliamentary system is a man with what 10% of the seats in the Knesset became prime minister because he cobbled together a coalition of really very, very different groups: liberals, conservatives, even Muslims. Well, that, and he was able with, by particularly with bribing the Muslim party, ROM, to come up with the 61 seats in the Knesset. Well, he's had two defections. One of the defections was the chairman of the coalition. Comes out that she spent the night before her announcement with Netanyahu, 3 o'clock in the morning, scheming for being Secretary of Health and being our Minister of Health and her position within the Likud hierarchy. And there was a time when I had respect for Netanyahu because he was the one person who would actually on occasion say that there's no such thing as Palestine, there's no such thing as a Palestinian. And he would say it very bluntly. And I appreciated his
candor,
willingness to criticize the Obama administration for the deal that they struck with Iran. And so Netanyahu had merit from those points of view, but he was a disaster in terms of his alliance and therefore bribery towards the Hasidic ultra-Orthodox religious parties, such that their festering cancer continues to destroy Israel because they were needed for his coalition. And during the time that he was stripped of power, his only interest was personally regaining power. He was never interested once in what's best for Israel, only what was best for Benjamin Netanyahu. His true nature came out as he was an opposition leader, and it was revolting. So we sit now in Israel where the current prime minister, Bennett, has two votes in the Knesset shy of being able to confirm his government. And yet there's all sorts of maneuvering taking place to try to maintain that government. It's sad in a way because he doesn't have the backbone to stand up to the United States, not on settlements, not on the disastrous nature of the two-state solution, not on what is truly Israel as opposed to claimed by the fakestinians or the Iran nuclear program. So it is time for a change. But Netanyahu, oh my God. And Netanyahu turned down, and we care deeply about Israel, so this is a subject that's important to us. Netanyahu turned down a plea deal that would have kept him out of jail on the bribery charges. And when you read what he did, I can't see how he stays out of jail. And so it's not going to be pretty if this trial finally resolves and he's prime minister. And you have Israel's prime minister thrown in jail. So it's a very frustrating time for God's people. That's why I guess God's not them. And, if you were in Israel today and you were to say, mm-hmm. we need to listen to Yahweh. We need to recognize that Yahweh is God's name and that he is vehemently opposed to Judaism. He's not pleased with our politics either. And that if we're going to form a relationship with him, we have to disavow religion and politics. Can you imagine saying that as a Jew in Israel?
And not going to prison?
Yeah, not, yeah. See how the rabbis take to you? All right, so this is the last passage we covered this time last week. Then I listened to the one speaking to me from the family home. That's a nice introduction. What we mm-hmm. have a tendency to call the temple, Yahweh doesn't refer to as a temple. I mean, there's a couple of words in Hebrew that sometimes are used that are translated as such, but 90% of the time, when we read temple in an English translation, the actual word that is being mistranslated is Beth.
Yeah.
Beth means family. It means household. It means home, means house. House, home, household, family is what Beth means. Beth does not mean temple. Beth is the basis of Bereth. Bereth is the family-oriented covenant relationship. So just this introduction to this statement, I listened. Now, this fella, Yaketzel, is a prophet. He's got an inside track to God. And yet he began by saying, I listened. I've been translating until recently Daniel. And all Daniel says, I studied the Torah, I studied the prophets, I listened to God. Then I studied the Torah some more, and then I studied the prophets some more, and then I listened to God. These are the prophets And that's what they do.
Shama.
Don't you think we ought to do it?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Now, if you want to do it, I listened to the one speaking to me. All you have to do is recite the Torah and Prophets. You are listening to God speaking to you when we read what he said to Yaketzel. These are the words. And it comes from the family home. When Yahweh returns and reestablishes the earth, reestablishes the kingdom of Dod David, reestablishes Yisrael, makes earth his home, fills it with his light, he calls it a home. Why? Because it is the home for the covenant family. It's our home too. And you notice here it says, from the family home. Yes, it's Yahweh's home, but it's also Yisrael's home, and our home is part of the covenant family. This individual came to be present, standing beside me, and he spoke as God to me. Yahweh can transform his light energy, some small portion of it, and present himself as an individual. And he does that because it's easier for us to relate to without being intimidated. You know, if God presented himself to us as the sun, and you get up close, that's going to be a little overwhelming. You know, if God presented himself as this giant to us, it's going to be intimidating. And so God doesn't want to intimidate us. He doesn't want to overwhelm us. He wants us to be comfortable around him so we can listen to him. And so he presented himself and was standing beside Yaketzel, and he spoke to Yaketzel as God. Now Yaketzel, Ezekiel, is constantly called Ben Adam.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Adam. Oh, son of man. It's a pretty interesting title. So, you know, it's a descendant of the first man created in Yahweh's image. Ben Adam. This place where I'm standing is the home of my throne. And in association with this place, the soles of my feet stand firmly. For that to have been said by Yahweh, he would have had to have taken Yaketzel forward in time. Easy for God to do. God can take any of us, or he himself can go forward or back in time. And the reason that he can do that is because he is basically light energy. And on a photon of light, time exists. Time simply is. It's not timeless. It's the fullness of time on a photon of light. So you're, as a seven-dimensional construct, if you will, so long as you are more than four dimensions, or fully four dimensions, you can maneuver in time. You can witness the future. And it has tremendous benefit for us, this concept, because this is what he did for Yaketzel. The universe is very large. It's approximately 95 billion light years across. That's really a big,
big number.
Big number. And so if you're traveling at the speed of light, it would take 95 billion years to get from one side to another. And that's a long drive. And the kids in the back seat are going to say, are we there yet?
Okay, yeah.
That's a really, really long time.
Yes.
So yes. It would, even if we could move at the speed of light, it would make most of the universe just, you know, 99% of the universe, even at the speed of light, is way beyond anyone's reach. But here's the thing that makes the future as light so spectacular. On a photon of light, it doesn't take 95 billion years to get from one side to the other. It takes no time. Because on a photon of light, time simply is. So you can get from one side to the other in no time at all. Now, isn't that a fascinating thing? But also because time for us is linear and we're stuck in the flow of it, to be of greater dimensions, which Yahweh is, and Yahweh has to be at least seven dimensions and is likely seven dimensions because he created a six-dimensional universe. And a being can always create a universe in one less dimension relatively easily without expending much of their own energy to do so. And so all Yahweh has to be is seven-dimensional to create a six-dimensional universe. But as you pass the fourth dimension, then you have the ability to go forward or back in time. So what happens here with Yaquetzel is that Yahweh took him to the future. And so now he is witnessing the aftermath of Yah's return. So he is standing there in year 6000 Yah, which is 2033. Now, if you're a Jew listening to this and you say, no, wait a minute, you know, it's only year 57 and change, and so what are you talking about? It, you know, 59, 80, 9. How can that even possibly be? Well, it's because Maimonides was a nincompoop. His dates have nothing to do with the genealogies in the Torah. The genealogy in the Torah is to enable you to know what year was 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 Yah. So you can know that in 2,000 Yah, 40 Yobel after expulsion from Eden, that the covenant was formed with Abraham. And you can know that in 3,000 Yah, we have Dode establishing the cornerstone for the house of Yahweh on Mount Moriah. And that at 4,000 Yah, 40 Yobel from the expulsion to Eden, the first four Moed Mikre were fulfilled. That happens to be 2033 on both the Julian and Gregorian calendars. So that you would know that 6,000 Yah is 2033 on our current calendar. But he didn't do that. No. Nope. He's had what he called the sanctification of the moon, and then fell in love as the Muslims do. You can see that he was tainted by Islam. You know, he was a vicar of Saladin. He was lived among Muslims. He was one of their champions. The big thing about the Quran is this multiple of 19, a prime number, and so. The Rambam became fascinated with the prime number 19, and it was 19 times moon phases, and that's how he came up with his timeline. And his timeline was what he said was back to creation, which is stupid. The Earth is, you know, 5 billion years old. Creation,
yes.
14 billion years old. The timeline goes back to Adam and Chawa being bolted from the garden. But the Rambam wasn't smart enough to figure out any of that. So he has a bogus timeline that makes no sense, that is extraordinarily easy to disprove. But if you're a religious Jew, you don't bother, because to question the rabbis and to question Maimonides, oh my goodness, they would have a tizzy fit over that. I'm telling you, we have 11 years to go until Yahweh's return. He's coming back in 2033, which is year 6000 Yah. That is what Yaquetzel was taking forward to. He was taking forward so that he could see Yahweh standing in his home next to his throne, which, by the way, he's not sitting on. He was standing there. That's what it says. And he was standing there. Why? Because his throne is not for him. His throne is for David and for every covenant member. It is the seat of Dode, but the cool thing about living with Yahweh is that we all get to sit on it. Now, as for me, I prefer just to look at it. There's too much inference. If you were to sit on it, that you've got responsibility. Don't want any more of that.
To do something.
I'm happy to look at Dode sitting on it and says, hi, man. Good for you.
Go for it, pal.
You heard these cats. Your turn. So, but anyway, we can sit on it if we want to. And if Yah was standing there, you know, I may, you know, go there for a moment just because it'd be cool to snuggle up to Dad.
Sure.
Then it goes on to say, happily, as a result of the relationship, this is Asher, as a blessing, a benefit of the association, God says, I will dwell here in this place where my name endures, in the midst of the children of Israel. Well, I'm here to tell you that unless a whole lot of the children of Israel start reading Yada Yahweh, stop being political and stop being religious, the number of the children of Israel that are going to be gathered there is going to be very small.
Small, yes.
So it's sneaking up on you. The last sands are going through this hourglass. And if you are a Yahud Jew or of the other tribes, a Israelite, you have a maximum of 11 years to be among the few where Yahweh's name is part of your life. Now, I'm hoping there are many, many thousands of you. And we will continue to do everything we can to expose and condemn Judaism and Israeli politics, religion as a whole, politics as a whole, militarism. We will continue to condemn those things that God hates so that more and more people start questioning them, because until you start questioning them and then leave them and disassociate from them, you cannot pursue a relationship with Yahweh. And we will continue to share the terms and conditions of his covenant and the meaning of each of the seven Moed Mikre. And there's really no shortcut to this. If you're curious about getting to know Yahweh as he revealed himself, understand what he is offering and expecting in return. There are now over 20 volumes of the Yada Yah series that have been rewritten expressly for you, available at yadayah.com. You can read them free. By the way, one of the things that's happened at yadayah.com is that David has instituted a bookmark system so that you can mark where you were in every book, multiple books, and you can share your book. So if you can actually email a bookmark to another covenant member or to a friend and say, hey, read this, and you can be reading together, and you can return to the same place. So you don't have a lot of time. And when I say there's 11 years left, and you think, well, I've got plenty of time. 11 years is a long time. I want to share two things with you. One is that two-thirds of Jews are going to die between now and then. And most Jews who survive the 11 years are going to be wiped out by Yahweh upon his return. I'm not stating this as my opinion. I'm not stating this because I want it to be so. I'm stating because this is what Yahweh says. Two out of every three Israelites are going to die between now and 2033. And in addition to that, we're going to find that that God's going to annihilate, in fact, very aggressively annihilate, the embarrass, humble, the religious and political who survive. Up to that point, God despises religion and politics. So You're never going to have a relationship with them without it. So you want to be really careful that you don't push the envelope, because you may not make it. And I want you to know that that one in three surviving till his return, and the majority then being wiped out. But that's better than it's going to happen to Goyim. It's going to be a higher percentage of Goyim that are going to die over the next 11 years.
Billions.
Yes. Now, the next thing is that why wait? Yahweh's not demanding. He doesn't have a single law. Doesn't ask you to bow down to him. Doesn't ask you to pray to him. Doesn't ask you to make any donations to him. Can't buy your way into heaven. Doesn't care that you're not perfect. His favorite guy was pretty imperfect, Dode. He's not asking you to be perfect. He is not asking you to do anything other than to walk away from religion, walk to him along the path that he has provided, which are the Moed Mikre, but it's all seven of them, and having nothing to do with the way that they're practiced by the rabbis. You can read all about them in the three volumes that exist just on the Moed Mikre, volumes 4, 5, and 6 of Yad HaYahweh. And after you've walked to him along the path that he has provided, trust and rely upon him. You can't trust and rely upon Yahweh unless you come to know Yahweh and understand what he's offering. That is why we have taken this time to translate so many passages and to comment on them and to try to help you understand how these things apply to your life. Then God says that he wants us to be especially observant. Observant doesn't mean keep, doesn't mean obey. It means to closely examine and carefully consider. And he wants us to explore and to evaluate the terms and conditions, the mitzvah of his covenant relationship, to understand what he is offering and what he is expecting in return. I've given you the first four of what he thinks that he is asking, and you have five fingers on your hand. There is a fifth. The fifth is that he asks us to circumcise our sons on the eighth day. And if we are not circumcised as men, we must be circumcised to engage in the covenant. Those are the five conditions, the five benefits I've already shared with you. They are provided by the first four Mikre, which were fulfilled in year 4000 Yah. The eternal life, being perfected by God, being adopted into his family, being enriched and empowered by him. That's what he's offering. So this says, happily, as a result of the relationship, it's Asher. Asher is the word that began all of this for us. It's the reason that 2 Samuel 7 has been translated 8, 9, 10 times throughout these many volumes, because Asher is in that prophecy, and English Bibles all say, when he sins or if he sins, I will not spare the rod. Well, I had been misled by my former religion. I am absolutely and unequivocally anti-Christianity now, but at one time in my life I was a Christian. And so that passage is used to suggest that it speaks of the Christian Jesus. Of course, there was no such individual, and he most certainly wasn't the Messiah, so there was no Christ. His name was Yosha, and I thought it spoke of Yosha, and so when it's saying, if he sins, when he sins, I will not spare the rod, and it caused me to say, well, if he sins, then he's no longer the perfect Passover lamb, and he's now paying this price for himself, and this can't be true, and so I began to translate it. Wanted to find out what it actually said, and found out Asher is a relational term. So it's when sin is associated with him. But the more we translated, the more we studied, the more we learned. And translation requires learning. You can't do an effective job of translating Yahweh's testimony simply by saying, well, this word means this today, so I'm going to render it such. No, you really have to understand the story. You got to know who God's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2 Samuel 7, he's talking about Dode. He's talking to Dode. He's talking about Dode. And so we've learned that as we move through. But it was that word 21 years ago that caused now 20-some-odd books of translations. And Asher is a verb. It's a preposition. It's a noun. It means many things. But you could distill it down as that Asher is the proper path that shows the correct way to walk to receive the benefits of the relationship. It is the way to get the greatest joy out of life. And so any of those and all of those thoughts apply when we see Asher. So happily, as a result of the relationship, as a blessing and benefit of the association, I will dwell here in this place where my name endures in the midst of the children of Israel. And so for Yahweh's name to endure, the rabbis have to go, bye-bye. There'll be no Hasidic Jews, no ultra-Orthodox, no Orthodox, no Reformed. No conservative religious Jews left because they are all against saying or recognizing Yahweh's name. Be no Roman Catholics, no Protestant Christians, no Orthodox Christians, no Muslims. Be no religious. Won't be any secular humanists either. It's the place where Yahweh's name endures. And when you become a member of Yahweh's covenant, Yahweh's name endures as part of you. He says, I'll give you a better name. Well, the name he's giving us is his name. We become his children, and so we inherit his name. But keep in mind here, the last part of this phrase was Bene Yisrael.
Mm-hmm.
God's focus has been and continues to be on the descendants of Jacob. He is not interested in a Gentile association. Goyim can become part of the covenant, but we become part of the covenant by becoming part of Yisrael, not trying to steal what belongs to Yisrael. God's focus has been and continues to be Yisrael. These books are written for Yisrael. And you might wonder, how is it possible that you can be anti-Judaism and be pro-Yisrael? Because God is. We're following his example. And so the family of Yisrael shall never again besmirch or corrupt my set-apart name. They are the religious and political leaders and advisors with their unfaithfulness and spiritual adultery. Or with their leaders' shrines to worship their corpses. That is such a powerful statement. You know, Kirk, we've talked about this before, mm-hmm. but what religion was practiced in Eden?
None.
What political party was prevalent in Indeed.
No, they were undeveloped. They had none.
Yeah.
Once again.
Was there a police department? How about
no.
an IDF?
No.
No.
Not even a Homeland
Supreme
Security.
Court, a justice system? No. Taxation? Don't think so. Currency? Nope.
Yay, none.
Donations? Prayer services? Worship services?
No sore knees.
None. The reason we're told about Eden is the Garden of Great Joy, Gan Eden, is God's idea of an ideal experience with us. We enjoy life together. We enjoy nature together. We explore. We talk. we learn and share together. That's God's idea of perfection. When he starts with the doorway that is Pesach and ends with Sukkah, shelters, which means to camp out with God, through those seven mikrei, we are returning to Eden. Year 6000, 2033, God is going to cleanse the earth of all of the religious and political corruption and return the entire earth, starting with Israel, back into the conditions experienced in Eden. He says all of the religious edifices and hosts of religion, people, will be incinerated. Gone. And we're returning to Eden. So we are returning to a time when Yahweh's name will never be besmirched again. And the most prevalent way that Yahweh's name is besmirched is corrupted, is to not say it, to write it out of his Torah. You will not find a religious Jew ever writing about Yahweh's name or even saying Yahweh's name. The same is true for Christians and Muslims. Mm-hmm. Yahweh's really serious about his name. His name is set apart. It's Kodesh. His name is a do or die issue. Now, knowing his name, using his name, loving his name, respecting his name is not enough alone for you to enter heaven. But not using his name, calling him the Lord, calling him Adonai, calling him may he be blessed or whatever they are, G-D, is enough to exclude you from heaven. It is the unforgivable sin among the 10 statements that were carved in stone. And so God is saying that his name means a lot to him. If it does not mean a lot to you, then you do not know him and you are not part of his family. You will not be among those celebrating his return, entering his home. My set-apart name will never again be besmirched or corrupted by religious or political leaders. Now, it's essential that we recognize that since this is Ezekiel in Yahweh's home at the time of his return, that right up to that point, religious Jews were continuing to devalue Yahweh's name. Right up to the bitter end. So this is a direct assault upon Judaism as it is practiced today. Now you could say, all right, why are you picking on Judaism when Christianity and Islam and social secularist humanism are all as guilty? Yes, they are. But
I'll kill your soul.
Yahweh didn't reveal the Torah to socialist secular humanists. He didn't reveal the Torah to Christians. Most certainly didn't reveal the Torah to Muslims. He revealed it to his people, Yisrael. And he's returning to his people, Yisrael. So, yeah, it's true that Christians and Muslims and socialist secular humanists and progressives and the conspiratorial are not going to be part of God's family. They are not going to enter the New Eden and return to God. But this is written to the children of Israel. And so the religion that he is condemning is Judaism as it is practiced today. And so the family of Israel shall never again besmirch or corrupt Lo Tamei Od, will never again throughout the whole of time desecrate, vandalize, taint, defile, or sully my set-apart name. They or their religious and political leaders and advisors, wa malek hem, with their unfaithfulness and spiritual adultery, la zanuth hem, their harlotry and whoredom, with their religious immorality. When Yahweh speaks of adultery. He is not speaking of a man having or a woman having a physical relationship with someone who is not their spouse. Why do we know that? Abraham had more than one wife. Dode, his favorite by far, who Yahweh constantly says is right, had, what, 8 wives and 10 concubines. The only one that God ever said anything about was Bathsheba, and because of the way that Dode went about acquiring her as a wife. So Moshe had more than one wife. That's not God's issue when he speaks of adultery. When he wrote it as one of the 7 statements on the second tablet, he's talking about spiritual adultery, where his people choose to worship false gods. And that's the nature of Judaism, Christianity, Islam. Even socialist secular humanism has their false gods, which are men.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So the family of Israel will never again be smirch or corrupt my set-apart name, nor their religious and political leaders with their unfaithful and spiritual adultery, or with their leaders' shrines to worship their corpses. Judaism has a greater fascination with the graves of dead rabbis than any other religion on earth. You know, the Muslims aren't bowing down to Muhammad's grave. Christians are not bowing down to Jesus's grave. Socialist secular humanists don't go and prostrate themselves at grave sites. One of my favorite American is Thomas Jefferson. I've been to his home, been to his gravesite. No genuflect, no religious experience there. But the rabbis and religious Jews are making countless pilgrimages to the sites of dead rabbis. So God's got their number. So that was the passage that we ended last week's program. I'm sorry for going into such detail, but I love this stuff.
Oh,
I
mean, good stuff.
Every word that God communicates interests me, and I want to share why it should be relevant to you. So some of the commentary I'd like to share with you about this is just that Yahweh is exceedingly serious about his name. The series of books that we have written, they're all published under the name Yada Yahweh. Yada means to know, to be aware of, to acknowledge, to be familiar with, and to understand Yahweh. And there is no trick to pronouncing Yahweh. He told Moshe that it was based upon the verb haya. Well, haya tells you how to pronounce the yah, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
H-A-Y-A-H. Haya. The book that we celebrate is called the Torah. Where do you think the O sound comes from? No, Torah has a hey at the end, ah, and the O in Torah is from the wah. So now, between Haya and Torah, you've got all 4 letters in Yahweh's name. You could add Shalom if you're still curious as to how to pronounce the Wah. The Wah, the O sound in Shalom is from the Wah.
Mm-hmm.
This is not difficult. The 4 letters in Yahweh's name are all vowels. Yah, O, Wah. After introducing himself by name in the first of the 3 statements that he etched in stone, Yahweh said that you will not exist with another God in my presence. And he also let us know that he is liberating us from the ways of man. That's what the first statement says. I am the one that released you, freed you from being held in bondage in Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is the crucibles of human, religious, and political oppression. He is liberating us from the way of man, and he's asking us not to be religious in the second statement. The second statement that Yahweh etched in stone from beginning to end is, do not be religious. Don't associate with any aspect of religion under any circumstances, because when you're religious, you corrupt your children to the third and fourth generation. Yahweh states that the nullification and renunciation of his name are unforgivable in the third statement that he etched in stone. That's the entire statement. It says it's absolutely unforgivable. If you negate the value of my name, which every religious Jew does, every Christian does as well, every Muslim does, every socialist, secular humanist does, if you devalue Yahweh's name, God will not forgive you. And if he does not forgive you, you have no chance of being part of the covenant, which means the end of your life is either the end of your existence, your soul is fades into oblivion, or if you have been part of the problem, you are leading others astray, then your soul will go to the place that rabbis pretend doesn't exist, Sheol, which is eternal incarceration and what is equivalent of a black hole. The only crime so designated amongst everything that Yahweh wrote throughout the Torah and prophets is the negation of his name and what is the single most salient aspect of Judaism. The unwillingness to say God's name, the unwillingness to write God's name, the unwillingness to celebrate God's name. It's unforgivable. And now, upon his return to his family and home, the highlight of his arrival, as he shares this moment with Ezekiel, Yaketzel, is never having to hear anyone desecrate his name again, writing G-D, writing may his name be blessed, by writing Hashem, by writing Adonai, the Lord. Never again. Well, that's a wholesale rebuke of Judaism. So let's be clear. This crime is still being perpetrated by religious Jews. They never say it. They never write it. They never acknowledge it, ever. They do not associate themselves, the Torah, Berith, Mikre, with Yahweh. They are the reason Yahweh's name remains unknown. The sole reason 4 billion people believe that it is either Jesus or Allah. The only reason that 4 billion people believe that God's name is Jesus and Allah is because religious Jews, rabbis, chose to desecrate his name, to hide his name, to never say or speak his name. There is zero chance, none, that Christianity could have taken root in the 3rd century CE if rabbis had proclaimed boldly that God has but one name and his name is Yahweh. Therefore, you can't have a God named Jesus. There would be no God named Allah if the rabbis in Yathrib, when they recited their Talmud stories to Muhammad to give him the the message that he bastardized and twisted to create his Quran, had referred to God as Yahweh. And he would know. You can't say, as he does, that Allah inspired the Torah, that the Quran confirms the Torah, that David dode, God was Allah. You can't say any of that stuff. because you'd be laughed out of, you'd be laughed out of Arabia. Actually, Muhammad didn't grow up in Arabia. He grew up in what is today Jordan in Petra. But that's another story. Had Jews referred to themselves as Yahudim, Yah's beloved, had they celebrated Yahweh's name, had they celebrated the Torah as it is written, had they recognized that the prophets predicted the exact day that the Passover lamb would arrive in Israel, on our calendars, 33 CE, on Passover, 4 days before Passover is when he walked into Israel, into Jerusalem. Had they done these things, they wouldn't have had the menacing religions of Christianity and Islam that have so tortured them over these years to finally give up on the failure that is Judaism. Yah was holding Judaism and its practitioners liable for the most egregious crime ever perpetrated by any individual or institution in all of human history.
Has to be.
More than Judaism, every religion man has conceived is idolatrous and immoral. The statue of St. Peter in front of the Roman Catholic Cathedral bearing his name was originally carved by pagans to represent the Roman god Jupiter. The obelisk in the center of the Vatican still bears the Egyptian inscriptions certifying that Amen is God. The Kaaba, which was moved from Petra to Mecca, is a rock shrine to rock gods, the largest of which is represented by the black stone. Judaism claimed under a Star of David. David did not have a star. It is a legacy of Kabbalah. America's most treasured symbol, the Statue of Liberty, depicts the Greek goddess Athena. The Christian cross was first associated with Tammuz in Babylon and then combined with the sun to form the Egyptian Ankh, the symbol of God and eternal life in that pagan religion. From a political perspective, the Washington, Jefferson, and Lincoln memorials in America are actually called temples and shrines. Tributes to Marx, Lenin, and Mao were godlike in Russia and China. Even the promised land, the words of Rabbis Hillel, Akiba, Maimonides, are considered scripture among religious Jews. And Christians have more saints than brains. Religious and political capitals are littered with tributes to the forefathers of these institutions. But sadly for them, and for those misled by them, this is all that will ever be known of them, because they will all be excluded from heaven along with their memory. The monuments to the lives will be like rotting carcasses. They will be no more. The rhetoric so loved by men is hated by God. The forefathers, so esteemed by men, with enormous edifices created in their honor, will be seen as less than worthless by God, who has already rejected and shunned them. He has been to our future. He has already destroyed them. It may seem odd to our ears to hear Yahweh speak of the religious leaders of Israel committing religious adultery and establishing shrines to venerate the grave sites and rotting carcasses of their most esteemed individuals. But this is what they have done. And not just in Israel, but in the diaspora, as Judaism was developed, not just throughout Europe, but in the Ukraine. There's a reason that World War III began in the Ukraine. It is not only the birthplace of Judaism as it is practiced today, Yes, Judaism, as it was practiced today, was created in the Ukraine, and God hates it. But it is also the place where the European animosity towards Jews festered and grew. It is in the Ukraine that more Jews per capita were hunted down and killed over a longer period of time than any other place on earth. It is the place where there are a higher percentage of armed Nazis than any other nation on earth. That's why the Ukraine became ground zero for what will grow into World War III. Try to emphasize the point that Yahweh has been making as he spoke of rabbis plastering over and whitewashing his testimony. That is to say that they covered over what he conveyed so that they could write their Talmud over his Torah. And in fact, they went so far as to call their goddamn Babylonian Talmud the Torah. They even called their religious party Torah, when in fact what they celebrate is the Babylonian Talmud. It is the same point Yah was making here, but now in reference to the Moed Mikre, whereas Pesach and Matzah provide the doorway and the threshold to his home. God says, with them offering their doorway and their threshold, juxtaposed against and in opposition to my doorway and threshold, door frame beside my door frame. So now there is a wall between me and between them. I'll continue Yahketzel 43:8 in a moment. This is the problem with religion. Mm-hmm. Judaism was not made out of thin air with Baal Shem Tov and the rabbis that were before him. No. They plastered over and they created their edifice right next to, and in many cases right on top of Yahweh's testimony. You know, Jews speak of the fact that they will soon be celebrating Passover, but for them, Passover is simply a historic event about the Exodus from Egypt. They don't speak of it as being the doorway to life. And the central ingredient in Passover is the recognition of the sacrifice of the Pesach lamb, the Pesach Eel, which all they will do is put an inedible bone that they call a Zeruah on the plate. Zeruah happens to be one of the most powerful prophetic tools. Zeruah is a sacrificial lamb. Zeruah is a protective shepherd. Zeruah is the leader of the flock. And a Zeruah is one who sows the seeds, truth, which can take root and grow. Moshe was a Zeruah. Dod was a Zeruah. Yahusha was a Zeruah. Hard to imagine, but God couldn't find a Jew willing to listen to him. And so the final Zeruah, according to the prophets, is the person now speaking to you. And yet, there is no understanding of that, even though God was very clear about it throughout his Torah and prophets. And one of the great tragedies of Judaism is that in trying to besmirch the reputation of Yahusha, who Christians call Jesus Christ, they fail to recognize, even though Gabriel told Daniel exactly when he was going to come into Israel, right, 4,000 Yon, Pesach, gave him the exact date that he would come into town. They do not accept him as the Passover lamb. And if you don't accept him on the Passover lamb, how in the world are you going to have the right doorway? You're not going to know how Yahweh fulfilled the promise he made to Abraham and Yitzhak on Mount Moriah back in year 2000 Yah, so that he fulfilled it 40 Yobel later in year 1000 Yah by putting his nephesh into Yahusha so that he himself became the sacrifice. But you don't accept him. You reject him. You're rejecting the doorway to life. And worse, you're putting your own damn doorway right next to it. Well, if God's doorway leads to life, where the hell do you think the fake doorway leads? And oh, by the way, the thing that Christians do is the thing that religious Jews are now doing. The worst possible outcome is to celebrate Passover and not matzah. And if you think matzah is simply about a missing ingredient, and it's still Passover, but without yeast, chametz, you're mistaken. It is chag matzah, of which Pesach is part. If you don't capitalize on the purpose of matzah, which is where Yahweh's soul, his nefesh, was sent by the set-apart spirit into Sheol to remove and to pay the ransom to purge our souls of religion and politics, to perfect us. If you don't celebrate matzah, Pesach is counterproductive because now your soul is immortal and eternally separated from God.
Yeah, nowhere to go.
So you got to think it through. And in Judaism, there is no celebration of chag matzah. Matzah is simply yeast. Chametz is simply an ingredient that is missing from the diet of Passover. That's not good enough. It's wholly counterproductive. It's like Jews celebrating the death and resurrection of their God, having no clue that God didn't die. Passover lamb gave its body, and that matzah followed immediately thereafter, integrated as part of the overall sacrifice so that not only we might live, but we might live perfected with the fungus of religion and politics removed from us so that we could be adopted on Bukkudim, which is a day that religious Jews do not celebrate. They don't like to celebrate Shabuah either because they think it was confiscated by those pesky Christians as Pentecost, when Shabuah represents the promise of the Shabbat, of God enriching and empowering us,
yeah.
And enlightening us. And oh, by the way, since it's seven Shabbat, that's what Shabuah means. Sounds like God's working on that day, isn't he?
I think so.
He's empowering and enriching us. There's no edict about making the Shabbat a day of a thousand rules.
Nothingness.
On how to do nothing. No, it's about being enriched and empowered and then celebrating being enlightened. So what this says is that Judaism has created a doorway, their doorway, that's juxtaposed against and in opposition to Yahweh's doorway. And if Yahweh's doorway leads to life, I got news for you. The Jewish religious doorway leads to death. And beside their door frame, their threshold, Yahweh's. We've long said that matzah is the threshold into Yah's home. And that's what this says. But it says that in Judaism, they have their own. And in so doing, they've created a wall between Yahweh and the religious. They have defiled, they have vandalized, they have besmirched my set-apart name. The single greatest crime ever perpetrated, because not only did it mislead millions upon millions of Jews, causing them to be excluded from the covenant and from heaven, causing them to be all tied up in their underwear over all the things that the rabbis tell them they can't do or must do. And at no time do they tell them to love and revere and accept Yahweh's name. And of course, because they didn't do that, there was a religion that grew up that called themselves Christians as a robbing attempt to rob Dode of the title of Messiah. They defiled, they vandalized, they besmirched my set apart name with their detestable abominations and repulsive religion. Bah, Toa Bahem, with their loathsome and abhorrent worship, which they have engaged in. This proclamation is being conveyed to Yaketzel upon Yahweh's return in year 6000 Yah, 2033 on our calendar. And God is smirching and condemning the religion of his people at that time. So God is condemning Judaism. The reason that I'm so frustrated with Netanyahu returning to power and the specter of that is that Netanyahu's ability to form a coalition is wholly dependent on the three religious parties and him making all sorts of concessions to them so they control the Western Wall, so that they control immigration into Israel. They determine who is a qualified as a citizen. They determine who can be married, who is divorced. They determine where Jews can eat and what they can eat and how they live their lives. That never should be the case. But with Netanyahu, it is what he must do to satisfy his lust for power. I have grown weary of them, Yahweh says. And I have decided that they should perish in my resentment and animosity. When we began this, somewhere in the midst of our program here, I said that two out of every three Jews is going to die between now and 2033 when Yahweh returns, yes. And that those one-third who survive, the majority of them, will perish. And they're going to perish at God's hand. Because he is not going to allow a religious person or an overtly political person into the promised land upon his return, the restoration to the conditions of Eden. And God is disgusted. He says, I've grown weary of them. I've decided that they should perish in my resentment and animosity as a result of my great disappointment and displeasure over this situation. God has said it, we must say it. If you are a Israelite, if you are a Yehud Jew, only opportunity for you to become part of the covenant, to come to know Yahweh, to be part of his family, to survive his return, which is imminent. It's going to happen within 11 years. Only way for that to happen is for you to reject Judaism. Period. No exceptions. So I have grown weary of them, and I have decided that they should perish in my resentment and animosity. The rabbinical observance of Pesach has become Keynesian, mimicking the offering of Cain, which was comprised of vegetables. Yahweh rejected it in favor of the lamb presented by his brother Abel. Therefore, just as religious Jews universally denounced the role Yahweh served, Yosha served, in fulfilling Pesach Passover, they forgo the benefit of Pesach because they remain clueless to its purpose. Matzah is the threshold we cross to enter Yahweh's home. It is the day Yahweh perfects us, removing the stench and the stain of religion from our souls. And so he can adopt us on Bikurim. However, the rabbinic variation of unyeasted bread is so pathetic, chag matzah has been relegated to the exclusion of chametz. By having done both, rabbis have constructed a wall separating the victims of Judaism from Yahweh. And this is no small thing, because it means for the past 2,000 years, rabbis have precluded Jews from eternal life and from access to heaven. This is part of the damage we're trying to undo, not only with this introduction to God, but with the entire Yada Yahwa presentation. And for those that think that we are overemphasizing Yahweh's condemnation of Judaism, I'm here to tell you, it doesn't matter where you're reading the prophets. Yahweh, through Moshe, who was a prophet, condemns the religions of the Jews. You go to Shamuel, and he is condemning the religion and the politics of Jews. You turn to Dode, and his enemies, those that he is besmirching, are religious and political.
Mm-hmm.
You then turn to the prophets, Yashaya. The first 12 chapters of Yashaya are Yahweh condemning religion as that it was practiced not only back then, but all the way until Yahweh's return, the whole story of Judaism and all of its flavors. The last chapters, the last 20 chapters of Yashaya, the same thing. Wholesale condemnation of Judaism. The same thing is true here in Yakatzel, Ezekiel. The same thing is true in Yirmiyah, Jeremiah. The same thing is true in Hosea. The same thing is true in Daniel. They're all talking about today, over the next 11 years. They're all condemning religion amongst Jews today. There is no exception. It's the number one topic. We're not cherry picking. It's overwhelming. Now, that said, God does have a lot of bad things to say about Islam and Christianity. And when Yahweh asked me to begin this process some 20 years ago, the beginning was Islam. He asked me to expose it and condemn it. And therefore, Prophet of Doom is a more complete condemnation of Islam than probably any book ever written. It uses the Quran and Hadith to prove that Muhammad was a pedophile and a rapist, that he was a liar and mass murderer, a terrorist among the most disgusting people who ever lived, and that every word of the Quran is a lie. Proved beyond any refutation. And now there are four volumes devoted to exposing and condemning Christianity. There is no way anyone with there's the least bit rational can read Questioning Paul and remain a Christian. But the rewrite of the Yada Yah series has been dedicated to conveying Yahweh's message. And Yahweh's message is that while Judaism and Islam, horrible. Christianity and Islam, I say, are just horrible, and he hates them and condemns them. God's focus is on exposing and condemning Judaism, because Jews are his people.
Yeah.
And it's essential that we recognize that and we convey it. So God hates all religion, but Judaism the most.
That's the biggest hold on him.
It is impossible to overstate Yahweh's disgust for what Judaism has done to vandalize his name. God affirms his antipathy. So often it is astonishing that religious Jews continue to antagonize him in this way. And so now you know why he wanted this witness to be entitled Yada Yahweh. I'm telling you, everyone who is listening, whether you were in St. Louis, where we were reaching out this week, or Boston, I think, was the previous week, doesn't matter if we even reached out to Yehudim and Yisrael a prior week. Doesn't matter where you are, who you are. There is nothing more important to Yahweh than his name. And you might say, well, why is he so fixated on his name? Because he's real. Because he's not Jesus. Because he's not Hashem. Because he's not Allah. Because he's not Shiva. Because he's not an unknown deity. Because his name isn't God. It's Yahweh. There's only one real God, and he has only one name, Yahweh. If you don't know Yahweh, you do not know God. And God does not know you. Why? Because his name says it all. It's a hand reaching down and out with an open hand to grasp bars. There are two people standing up in the midst of his name, reaching up to his hand. They represent Abraham and Sarah, mother and father of the covenant. And in between them is the tent peg, which increases, adds to, makes more secure, enlarges a home. That's Yahweh's name. It's based on the verb haya, to exist. And if you want to exist, you need to know and celebrate Yahweh's name. His name means something. And in his Torah, he told us how to pronounce his name. And religious Jews have done everything they can to hide Yahweh's name so that Jews will venerate the names of the rabbis and not Yahweh. Well, Kirk, we've reached the end of our broadcast. We're now still recording, but no longer broadcasting. This may be as good a place as any to end. I'm delighted that we were able to use the text that Yahweh revealed to Yahkatzel to speak about the doorway and the threshold known as Pesach and Matzah. Because
next week we celebrate
both of them. So I wish everyone a wonderful celebration of Pesach as we celebrate Pesach next week, leading to Matzah and Bukurim. May Yahweh bless you. May his wonderful set-apart spirit be upon you. May you celebrate his name. May you observe his Torah. May you learn from his prophets. And we look forward to being with you this time next week. May Yah bless. Good night.
Good night.